And delighted to see that you're going to be doing so much around Samuel Beckett in the next couple of weeks. Michel Ribalka mentioned that his film is called Film, and he wrote a play called Play, and I suppose if he were given to lectures, he'd give a lecture called Lecture, but I'm not. And so I decided to pick the subject of silence. And there are very many ways of approaching Beckett's work. One can talk about his language, his silences, which is what I want to do, but you can also approach it through truth, the search for truth of his characters, the problem of the individual, the question of the self in dissolution, and many other ways of approaching the sizable work of Samuel Beckett. And yet, I think these aren't really very different ways of dealing with the same reality. They somehow link up, and we are talking about the same theme in Beckett's work. There's great unity in it, no matter what the point of approach. Is this too far? Maybe I'm... No? Okay, thank you. I'd like to speak about some of these themes, but I am choosing a particular approach, that of words and the corollary of words, language on the one hand, silence on the other. But I do realize it's only one of a number of possibilities, and that they're not exclusive of one another. Still, I don't think that talking about silence in Beckett is arbitrary, because I do think that silence is one of the key markers in Beckett's work, one of the major points of reference, and which leads to the rest of his work. The fact is that silence, for me at least, is at the base of Beckett's writing, a sort of emptiness, a void in the heart of his work. There are countless examples of this void, and many, of course, examples of the quality of the silences which he puts into them or which we can find in them. If you've seen Waiting for Godot, you have surely been aware of the many silences which punctuate the play. And if you have the text in your hand, you'll probably have been struck by the number of stage directions Beckett put in that simply read, silence, silence, silence. In his more recent works, there are even more silences, and silences which Beckett tends to indicate with great precision. Silences in the plays, for instance, indicated 5-second silence, 10 seconds, and so on. He's very precise in indicating just how long he wants the silence to last, and it's a long time. 10 seconds of silence in a stage play is a long period of silence. People feel very awkward, not only the actors, but the spectators too. Silence then is something very tangible for Beckett, a presence, if one dare say, of course an absence, but a presence also because one is so aware that Beckett's work is organized around that very time of silence. In a more metaphorical sense, one can say that the real subject matter for Beckett throughout his work is language itself. And one may say that metaphorically speaking, and perhaps even practically speaking, from the practical point of view, because language is not only what composes his work, as it does any other work, but it's what organizes it. It's what it's about. Of course, language is the other side of the coin of silence, as silence is the counterpart of language, the failure of language. And throughout Beckett's work, we see a constant series of attempts to express, to say, to speak, to say something. Texts which reach us through language and silence. And these are the ones that I'd like to talk about. His approach to writing some of the most familiar works, like Waiting for Godot and Endgame, some of the novels, and particularly Molloy and the Unnameable, and then some of the more recent prose texts and very recent plays.